I'm going to call this meeting to order. We are ready to go. There's been a slight change in the way we're doing things. Up behind me up on the board is the order that we're taking today. If you look at your own sheet, there's a couple of things that have been moved around. Cooperative Extension is first, and on your sheet, OAR is second. County Historian is in the right order. The History Center is in the right order, and then we're adding mental health at 5 p.m., and we're moving TCA to 5:30, and the Ledge at 5:45, and Youth Services at 6. So right now it's Cooperative Extension. Ken, come on up, please. Everyone has a copy of yours.
No surprises. All right, well, good afternoon. Looks like my assistant is in the same place that all of the rest of the legislators are. My assistant being the one who usually comes to the meetings with me. Now Phoebe basically worked with me on the presentation. It felt like I had it under control, so she said she wouldn't show up. So, just quickly, I just wanted to here's what I basically want to talk about in these seven slides. Is I just briefly one slide on programmatic impact, since that's really why we're here, right? Efficiency of operations of cooperative extension, the impact of the tentative budget on cooperative extension, and the OTR summary. You've all seen the impact statements that Joe had asked us to prepare, so I just wanted to remind us of three key areas that we work in. There are many others, but the local food economy, you know, these three are areas that clearly cooperative extension has been heavily involved in: the local food economy, energy efficiency, renewable energy, and the agriculture industry. And we have good information to suggest that local food economy, amount of money that's being spent on local food, or the percentage of the food dollar that's being spent on local food, has increased from 5.7 to 15% since 1995. As you all know, we're working a lot in the area of energy efficiency and renewable energy, and I just wanted to put some of the possible savings that are there that we can be looking forward to in the years to come. And then the agriculture industry, which is a $61 million a year industry. And the second number down, the second point down there, as many of you are aware, we've been producing a table each year, which you will get at some point. But I didn't want to draw away from the more important parts of this discussion. And just as we've totaled up the numbers over the years, we've almost doubled in terms of the number of program participant numbers. And if you look at the repeats, the people who've repeated their interactions, which is really where behavior change comes in, those numbers have more than doubled. And we're probably over 10,000 people who work with us repeatedly on an annual basis. Pretty significant in terms of its impact on Tompkins County. I also wanted to point out in two reasons for the efficiency of operations. We're good stewards of your money, and I'd like to remind the legislator of that. We've had a chance, some of you may know, we've been looking at some sort of back office operations with cooperative extension across the state, and as part of that, we've actually had a chance to begin to look at rankings of different parameters related to finance and HR and other areas. And in 2003 versus today, the finance department is actually, in our case, has moved from about 20th place when you add up all the different parameters into the top three. And I would argue that we're probably the top right now, but it doesn't really matter. Its point is that there's been significant improvement. And the same goes with HR. Back in 2003, that we would have been probably about seventh, and today we're in the top two. coupled with that and related to that, too, is the fact that the program staff to admin staff ratio has doubled, essentially, in the last 7 years. We've gone from four program staff to one admin staff to eight program staff to one admin staff over the last 7 years. And that part of bringing that up, the second reason for bringing that up is because more than that when it comes to, we can't do much more to improve our efficiency. I mean, we will continue to look, but when it comes to staffing ratios, if we're talking about cuts going forward, we're talking about program. And in this case, with this year, we'd be talking about not just frontline staff, but we're talking senior staff if the county continues to move forward with the proposed budget. So what we have here is a county target, which has been dropped this year. The 6.9% decrease is $48,000. There's a youth services county also has a number of contracts with Cooperative Extension, including youth services, parent education, the probation department, the public information, and then there's a whole set of contracts that we have with the county that has no impact on sales tax or property tax. Those red numbers are the ones where there are significant cuts. So youth services contract, $267,000 contract. Parent education, $26,000. Probation department, $2,500. Those are all zeroed out in the tentative budget. That totals to $345,000, which is down there on the county total under the dollar change line. That is, and you'll notice, too, that the county contracts with no share of sales or property tax are basically staying even. You factor those all in, and we're looking at a 22% decrease in county appropriations from the sales, from basically county appropriation and contracts for next year. There are other reductions that we face as a result of being tied to county funding, which is, it's approximately $45,000. It's still hard to tell. So our total, the red ink there for the year, for next year, with the tentative budget, is $390,000. We currently have about 80 FTEs. They're spread across 200 staff. We have a lot of staff who work casually. But we'll be looking at layoffs of 8.5 to 12.5 full-time equivalents under this scenario, including one senior staff person and program staff. There's no other way we'll be able to cut this if the thing moves forward the way it is. We have currently five senior program staff who are paid for by the county, and one of those would at this point, that would be the recommendation, because we can't take anybody out of admin. There's nobody left to take from admin staff. That equals 18 staff, and the reason for the range there is because, as you all know, on the Rural Youth Services contract that we have, the towns put in as much or more as the county does in for the Rural Youth Services contract. In other words, we provide youth services to after-school programming in middle schools across the county, and the towns put in at least as much as $267,000 into that set of contracts. And we don't know what the towns are going to do, and that's why that number is 8.5 to 12.5. If the towns continue to fund us, it would be closer to 8.5. If the towns decided not to, in some cases they may not be able to, because it just wouldn't be feasible to have a third of a person or a quarter of a person or two-tenths of a person working in a town. In local dollars, because one of those contracts, the parenting education contract, is while it with us it's $28,000 or $26,000, with the county actually picks up about $10,000 of that. So the local share, the 2010 total local share was $1,005,128. And it would be moved down in 2011 to $660,000 for a decrease of 345, which is 34%. And our OTRs, we made a request for, there's a maintenance of effort, which at this point would be to maintain your senior staff position. That was requested. We put it in as a maintenance of effort request, and it was not recommended. The county, other county departments, of course, have these are on this on the target side of the budget. The two key contracts that are on the table, and you'll have an opportunity to explore the top one when Nancy Zaylor presents later today. And the parenting education one will be included as part of what Patricia will talk about when the DSS presents. Those are the two OTRs target requests from other county departments that directly tie into contracts with us. And then we have one other OTR, a one-time request for $2,500, which is for a New York State mandated ag district review. And in this case, the funding for this, as you know, last year, the funding for the ag planning and the planning board was moved over into our target funds. It used to be a contract. It was moved into our target funds. And that, too, was obviously would receive a 6.9% cut this year. The county submitted a request, or to the state, a proposal to the state, which was funded, which requires this cooperative extension to include $13,000 in matching funds. The current amount of money that's allocated for the Ag Farmland Protection Board is about $15,500, or almost $16,000. You take $13,000 out for the match that we have to put in, which is towards this grant that is there for the county. That leaves you about $2,500 left, and that $2,500 is supposed to be able to. And that, so we can either do the state mandated piece and do none of these, which includes annual additions to the Ag District Review, which we're supposed to do, the review of PDR applications and efforts to increase community agriculture awareness like through events like Farm City Day and others. So essentially, what we have it, and this, of course, the decision for what would actually be done is a decision made by the, will be made by the Ag Farm and Protection Board as well as the program committee of cooperative extension, so we don't know which we would end up doing next year. So I've opened that for questions. Yes, Pat. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Pat.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions about the youth services funding. As I understand it, we have had a contract with cooperative extension, which we are proposing, which in the proposed budget has not been included. How does that work when it comes to the various towns and municipalities that also put up money for this program? Do they also contract with cooperative extension?
Yes. So there's a couple of different ways that these contracts work, but in the case in many of the cases, what happens is we have a contract with the county to do provide municipal youth services, to provide rural youth services. And then we have contracts with each town to carry out the work in their town. So in the case of Lansing receives some funding from the county, which is then incorporated into the contract, which we sign with you.
Okay. So may I ask a follow-up?
Sure, keep that going.
One of the concerns that's been expressed when I've talked to people out in Lansing has to do with the not just the positions themselves for the people that carry out this program, but the fact that through cooperative extension, I think it's through cooperative extension, the benefits have been able to be provided for those positions. If the town, in fact, picked up some of the funding for this program, either continued the previous amount or put up some additional amount, would those positions still be able to have that benefit funded the way it has been in the past, or would those positions lose their benefits?
any staff who works for cooperative extension has those benefits. So if we had a contract with somebody where we were hiring, and if we had cooperative extension staff involved, if they work a certain number of hours, then they do receive those benefits. However, what we don't know, one of the things that's not in, at the moment, the way this structure works for RYS is we have people who are working in the towns, the people you see, the people that everybody sees working, the frontline staff, essentially.
Right.
And then there's another set of people who work based in our office who support those staff. And so the town, let's say that Lansing wanted to continue this and wanted to continue at the same rate they were, there would be, in addition to what the Lansing is actually providing right now in terms of the money and whatever the county is providing to the town, what Lansing is, let's just say we have a contract with you for $50,000. I don't know what the number is. The contract that we would have to sign with you going forward would have to cover more than $50,000. Because we have people on staff who are working in support of this program who are not actually working in Lansing. So let's say that Lansing spends 25 and the county contributes 25. In addition to that, there's another set of money that comes to us to support that program within our office. So you might end up spending, instead of 25, it might be 60 or 65.
Where does that amount of money to support the people in the office currently come from? Does that come from the county?
Comes from the county.
And from the county piece of the contract, then?
Yes.
So do you consider that, is that fair to call that an administrative cost, or
It's actually program-related,
okay.
too,
okay.
because, yeah.
That still didn't quite answer the question about, would there be then also an additional cost to continue to provide benefits?
No.
Or not?
There is a cost. We do have some benefits that need to be charged, but I think actually they're charged right now in the town contracts anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
Frank, and then Peter.
Ken, I have a couple of questions too. The let's stay on this slide right here. It was explained to us at the planning committee meeting yesterday that this function, as you can see, it's state mandated, is going to have to be performed anyway, because Monica was pretty explicit about that, and that it really is a two-year commitment. There's a 2012 piece to this too, of approximately another $2,000, Monica. I just want to make sure I had it clear, based on what was told us yesterday. If cooperative extension and the through the Ag and Farmland Board, but it's the Ag Review. If Cooperative Extension does not perform this task, the County Planning Department will have to perform this task because it must get done. Is that your understanding of this? And if that's so, the County Planning Department's got to come up with funding for this task also. Is that?
That's my understanding. Monica's right there. If you need further clarification, Monica can
That's
speak
correct.
To that.
And they,
oh, I
you
got
know,
a couple
they too
more,
would have
Carol.
To look where. I don't know if this is on. They too would have to look where in their budget that could be accommodated. And also, our staff have been doing it for the county for at least 30 years, and so I think we've gained some efficiency and credibility in doing this review, both with the state as well as with the farm community.
Okay. Ken, the other question I have is, back up a couple of slides to the one where it says programmatic impact. The agricultural industry, the $61 million per year, can you say what comprises that 61? That's direct income to the county?
No, that's the total agriculture sales generated by the 588 farms in the county.
And that includes dairy,
all
veg
the types
crops,
of it. Yeah, part-time,
apple.
Full-time. No, it only includes production agriculture, so what is generated and sold from farms.
So landscaping is not included?
There's greenhouse. If it's production, it's included. So landscaping is not, but production agriculture is. So greenhouse nursery is included, but not landscaping.
But viticulture, grapes would be included?
Yeah. Anything so that's grown, fed, eaten. So, oh, well, not always eaten.
So that number may actually be higher, Monica?
If you included the actual total sales and service industry in horticulture, and if you actually the data that TCAD uses, their numbers, and I don't remember how they get them, but they come up with about a $90 million industry in their numbers, if you look at their economic development the strategy. So that's what they've used in there.
One reason, and I'm glad Peter is here, because one reason that I wanted you to go into that a little bit is Peter raised the question the other night at one of the meetings about he'd heard some different numbers applicable in different venues as to what the value of agriculture was to the county, and that's it, Peter. One last question, Ken. On the slide that has the youth number on it. OTR summary slide. Thank you. That 282,000 for municipal youth services, this is a question that was asked yesterday at the Planning Committee also, but for a different program. Have you looked within Cooperative Extension to see if any of the services that are covered in that line that would be affected by the cut to youth services could be absorbed even modestly anyplace else within Cooperative Extension?
I don't see where. No. I mean, yes, I have looked, and the answer is no. I mean, one of the things that we've actually been working with the program staff is to see where there might be possibilities to reduce the amount, the actual cost for municipal youth services. And one of the things you have to point out is that over the last several years, there have been reductions in that line, in the municipal youth services line. And so the actual amount of, I mean, at this point, it's practically impossible to cut anything further from sort of the programmatic aspect other than staff. So if, I mean, and staff right now, I mean, essentially these programs are based on staff working in these counties, or in these towns. We have people who are working half-time, and we have people who are working full-time. And it's tough. We can't do it for less than half-time in those towns where there is.
You were describing it to Pat before. Yeah. The question about the benefits, the individuals who are working within this program, in the back of my head, I have it that Cornell picks up part of the tab or all of the tab for benefits to Cooperative Extension. Is that true?
They're picked up through our relationship with Cornell.
With Cornell.
Yes.
Peter. I'm finding this whole youth services thing hard to follow. I can't quite figure out who actually does the frontline delivery of these things. Is it, somebody must sit there with the youth.
Yeah,
and
it's
talk
our staff.
To them, and
it's our staff.
I can't figure out where that function is done. It seems like money is transferring between co-op extension and municipalities and the county. But where is actually the delivery done, the final step?
Okay, so the way the picture is, if you look at it if you just, somebody in a school, there are Cooperative Extension staff who are based in the middle schools. They're there at lunchtime, during lunch hour, and so on. They're there to essentially, they work with teachers and with guidance counselors identifying students who it would be good if they were actually able to participate. This whole thing is voluntary, but this is a program that's targeted to at-risk kids, but it's not it's not designed to be only for at-risk kids.
Right.
Because what you want as a whole is a healthy mix of kids in this. So recruiting is done in the school, And after school, there are programs that are offered, and there's a range of programs that are offered at any given time. The programs usually go for 6 weeks to 8 weeks, one day a week. So a student might actually participate in three or four different programs going on. That's typically the way they're done. And this youth basically interacts with another set of youth who are choosing to go into that same program and with the staff person from Cooperative Extension. So they develop, over time, they develop relationships with the staff.
Okay, so it's Co-op Extension that's actually delivering the service.
And the Co-op Extension staff work with county youth services and these youth commissions, which are local groups of volunteers in each town.
And the city.
To develop, develop programs that would be appropriate for youth. And lead to something more. It's not just entertainment. It's youth development.
Right. I understand. Okay. So that clarifies. I have one more question. The business about the overhead, from a dim memory of my past involvement with Cornell Finances, it's true that in what used to be called the statutory units, I've forgotten what the name is at the moment, that New York State picked up the fringes. Is that what we're talking about here?
That's essentially what's happening, yes.
So it's New York State that's the person that's picking it up.
Ultimately, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, thank you.
I have Carol, and then I have Pat, and then Mike.
Okay, I've got a few. So first, I'm trying to rectify. I think that I understand how your million-dollar former budget and the $650,000 target budget justify. So tell me if this is correct, that the 650 plus what you in the past got as contracts add to that million? Is that
Our county total with all the contracts and our county target and the county appropriation in 2010 was $1.5 million. Okay. That includes $521,972, which are contracts that are basically pass-through money, in most cases are pass-through money. The biggest one is for our food stamp nutrition education program, which is $300,000. Then in 2011, we're going to see zeroing out of the youth services contract, the parent education contract, and the probation department contract. Public information remains. Those are all contracts that are covered under sales tax or property tax. The set of contracts where there's no share of sales or property tax included is will continue at their same level next year, ostensibly. We think they will.
So those are contracts that funding has come from other places, mostly New York State.
Mostly New York State. There's a county beautification. We have a county beautification contract, which comes from room sales, room tax, and there's a compost, solid waste contract that comes from the solid waste fee.
Okay. So the portion, as I count it in our budget books, the portion of your budget that in the direct program expense had been $699,000 in the 2010 modified, becomes $650,000, so a difference of $48,000, and from the 2009 actual budget, it's a $59,000 difference. So your basic program activities are being reduced, plus these contracts will be reduced.
Right.
That's correct. Okay. So one of the things that we get from our departments that give me a greater understanding of what the actual portions of their program that they won't be able to deliver anymore with these cuts.
Right.
We get the line items that tell us what is being cut, and I don't feel like I have a good understanding from what's in our budget books of the particular programs or staff positions that will no longer be able to be funded with either. Well, I have a little bit of a better understanding of the ones for the contracts,
right,
but not the ones for the basic
right
program.
What
is
will,
there any way to get
yes
that?
Because the board actually hasn't decided what it would be, but What we have essentially left to cut, if you will, is, I mean, there's about a, is, we have basically one, in terms of, there's about, we could probably cut about $15,000 to $20,000 from our operation expenses. In other words, through energy efficiency savings and other things that we can do, we can save about $20,000. That still leaves, when you subtract all these things out, there's about a 90 or, you take all those contracts out and don't count the contracts, there's probably about $90,000. So out of that $390,115 that's there right there, there is about $300,000 worth of contracts. Okay, so the staff who are involved in those contracts would be laid off. And that zeroes out those contracts. The other $90,000 that remains that we need to make up, we can probably cut about $20,000 from operational expenses. I figure we could probably do that. At least 70 left. The only thing that's left to cut are program staff, senior program staff. So okay, we will cut a senior program staff.
Okay. The place I was going with this was, is there any way for us to get to comment on the particular programs that you're going to have to cut? You're telling us are the youth services, because that's what's been done by contract, and things like a smaller example is this ag, well, it's not smaller, smaller in dollars, is the ag district review. And what at PDEC yesterday, Monica was talking about the fact that the reason that that's not in the target, the base budget, or target, is that it's an activity that's only done once every 4 years. So it's not in the base because we don't have to do it annually. And the question that came up in the committee, and I get that, the question that came up was, well, is there any way that we can, as a committee or as a legislature, help make any choices that say, okay, for $2,000 or $2,500, here's this other program, this annual program, that maybe we prefer not to do this year in order to do this activity that needs to be done every 4 years. In a bigger way, youth services might be, you know, is there some other activity, some program that's part of our $650,000, main part of our budget that maybe we could forego for a year or two in order to tide over, you know, if in fact the municipalities come to us and say we can do a slightly bigger piece, could Cooperative Extension come back and say, well, maybe we can do this for less money, but it means we can't deliver that Y program instead of X program instead.
Kenny, before you answer, Carol, I've been listening to that, and it feels like to me that what you're asking for and you're asking the legislature to do is literally have an input on every program that Cooperative Extension does, and I don't think that's our role. I think our role is to look at the big numbers and decide if it gets a reduction, then the director and the people who actually do the programs would have to figure out what it is they needed to keep or not. That's my sense. Pat, you're next.
What, can I get an answer to that? No?
Go ahead.
Back on youth services again. Has there, as I understand it, you may think, Jim, that this question falls under the same kind of constraint, but let me try it and see. I guarantee you it will be short. as I understand it, you're surveying, it's targeted toward at youth risk, but it's open to anybody, and that there are, in fact, kids who participate in this program who probably, if it were a fee-based service, could afford to pay for part of the service. Have you ever considered having some kind of a sliding scale for participation?
I think I would let that question be answered by... can I answer that question myself? Ken Schlatter? Yes, Ken Schlatter has considered it. But the program is a partnership between the county, the commissions, the county youth services, mm-hmm. and Cooperative Extension.
Okay.
I have Mike, and then I have Brian, and I have Dooley, and I'll come back to you.
Okay. Ken, I was looking at the increase in participants that you showed from 32,000 in 2003 to 60,000 in 2010. That's pretty impressive. I wondered if the youth services is totally eliminated, the 282,000, what will that do to your participant numbers?
Well, there's about 3,000 participants in 3,300 something participants in rural youth services.
So it would drop to around 57,000? Is that what we're talking about?
Based on that, yes. It may not even drop that much because we might figure out some other ways to interact with those kids, but it wouldn't be repeated interactions, which is, I want to really underscore that, especially when it comes to youth. It's that repeated that relationship that they develop with adults, and it's got to be with. I mean, it's got to be a. It takes time, as you know. I mean, I remember I was a kid once, and I never talked to my parents. Where's Kathy? Kathy's in the room. She can attest to how bad I was with my parents. And having an adult around who can have a strong relationship with a kid is absolutely critical. And that's what this program brings, and it does it with well over 2,200 kids who get that kind of relationship established with adults.
Are the other increases there over those 7 years, are they across your programs, or are there areas where it has bloomed?
It's a mixture of both. There are some things that we've done that have, I mean, certain programs we're doing now weren't doing 7 years ago. But it's more been, I think if I had to characterize it, if I had one choice, I would say that it's basically been an overall growth in each of the areas. Okay. Thank you.
Brian.
Thanks. The rural youth services workers that are in the schools, in the towns, you said typically are half-time folks?
No, it's about 50-50. Some of the staff are working full-time, about half and half.
Okay. My question is, of those that are not full-time, this can be an always, sometimes, never, whatever answer, but are they at all connected with the school system itself, as if to say, you know, they're half-time RYS workers and half-time teacher's aides, let's say, in the school system? Does that happen? Or
I can tell you, I know one person who works in a school, but I don't know more than that, and I don't know if Linda would have that answer. Nancy does. Two people. So two out of the 15 staff have some school-related position.
Okay. Of those two, and I guess possibly we can explore the possibility of that arrangement being more prevalent than two. I don't know. I'm just asking. But in that case, some of the additional costs, the benefit costs and stuff like that, how are they divvied up now? Are they borne by the school district or through your program or a combination?
Please use the microphone.
The benefits are paid through Cornell, but the schools support the programs in a lot of different ways through internet services, computers, copying, mailing, office space, free space in the school. I mean, they do contribute. This is a partnership between many, many people, the county, the towns, Cornell, Cooperative Extension, the schools.
I understand that. I'm simply asking the question. Different things we can possibly explore. I mean, it's a win-win. If those folks aren't in the schools are they're in for a rough ride, as well as the community. So it is a win-win. If we need to make contact with schools, we're all trying to make this work. And So I'm simply asking the question. Thanks.
I think if I can answer it a little bit, too, I think the one of the points, I mean, you brought up a really good point, which is you're exploring options, and several other people were looking at options, too. You know, from my conversations with legislators and actually with Joe and others, there's strong interest in, I mean, there's a strong recognition that this program is valuable, and we need to figure out a way to keep it going. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we're all at, is let's figure out how we're going to make this work.
Yeah. I mean, in the big picture of things, for myself personally, in my district out in Groton, it's going to be a matter of, okay, am I going to pay an additional county tax? Is it going to be more of a school tax? I mean, it's got to be paid for somehow. But how to efficiently do that, I don't know. It's certainly worth exploring, I believe.
One of the things, though, that we should probably remember, and that is that, you know, my strong sense is, and the data suggests from other places, that it's not an if, it's actually true that these kinds of programs prevent risky behaviors and things that lead to high expenses, right? Foster mm-hmm. care and so on and so forth.
Yep.
The towns don't pick up the cost for that if that happens here. That's picked up by the county. Towns have no responsibility, towns have no mandate for picking up foster care or these other things that are at-risk kids. That's the county that picks that up. And I, you know, at the risk of having towns start thinking, well, geez, maybe we don't have to chip in as much, the fact is that if this is an insurance package, you've got towns picking up a substantial portion of the premium on that insurance package.
Julie.
That's a very important point that you just made. Thank you. I hope that we will see what you alluded to earlier, that is your more traditional handout that helps me understand exactly what you do. In our budget book, the text I found very useful, but I don't know what your total budget and your total staff is and what the history of those numbers are. Will that be in your supplemental handout?
The history of, I'm sorry, I'm not following.
Your total budget, not just the county's contribution, and your total staffing levels.
Yeah. I actually had on that table, I erased the line, I had a line that had the rest of our grants and contracts. And it sort of goes back to a little bit to the question that you asked, Carol. In fact, you know, the vast majority of the work that we do is done through grants and contracts. In other words, it's paid for through grants and contracts. So our grants and contracts line, over and above what we have from the county, this year we have $1.5 million from the county. We have about $3 million in contracts, and grants and contracts that are used to do a lot of the work that we do in the county. The county money, historically, that appropriation has been used to maintain senior staff to work and to run the operation. Is to have the roof over our head and that sort of thing. And the county and historically has encouraged us our board of directors and our program committees, who are made up of people from throughout the county, including legislators and town government people, have encouraged us to use that money in that way, where we essentially leveraged county dollars to bring in substantially more money. If you add in the benefits package that we get that's brought into this, the total number, it's about $5.6 million that's for the association. So the county contributes, and the appropriation contributes about $700,000, and we multiply it 8 times to get $5.6 million.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I think what you're saying reminds me of what Soil and Water Conservation District said, that they similarly leverage what the county gives them, and their budget is largely grants and contracts. Yours is just much more complicated than theirs. The Ag District review seems like a relatively simple thing for us to solve if we could do the following. Since it's done over a 2-year period, having 2 years of one-time money would take care of that. It wouldn't put it in the target, but every few years we would go back and look at it that way. I'm much more concerned about youth services, and I won't ask you any questions about that other than to say I would like that slide blown up and in color. The little version of it we have here is almost unreadable. Could we get that?
Yeah. Kevin, can we put it in color?
Okay. I'm going to try again here. Sometimes when you, I was telling Jim before, if you, sometimes when you walk a runner, even with the bases loaded, you still have to come out and pitch another one. So I'm going to try to pitch again here. I'm reacting to the line at the, in your narrative just above the budget that says that some programs will be cut or reduced in scope, but Cooperative Extension's Board of Directors has not yet determined which ones. So I guess I just, my question is, when you determine that, especially if it's before the end of our budget process here, is that something that, it's something that I would appreciate having, even if it's something that not everybody needs to see.
The issue is that, and I guess we could ask Sean to answer that question. She's on the board. She's the president of the board. But the fact is that, short answer, no. They won't be able to make those decisions before. I will say that part of the reason that they don't make those decisions is because the board would spend probably 35 or 40% of their time each year doing this. It's hard enough, bad enough that the staff spends that kind of time working on it. But to bring in the board of directors, the whole governance structure, to also deal with that in the, each year to look at this, because we go, as we all do, we go through this each year. The board makes those decisions in November and December after the budget is passed.
Any other questions for Kevin? Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
OAR.
Great questions, by the way.
I'll be fairly brief. I think you got some of OAR last week when the Human Services Coalition presented, because OAR is one of the agencies that goes through the Human Service Coalition review process and vetting through their committee. But I think there was some interest in a little bit more detail. So I'll see how technologically savvy I am, if I can push a button. I can never get the remote to work at home on the TV, so there we go. What you're really looking at for OAR next year is a 12% cut in our expenditures, total cut, and a reduction of FTEs from 4.6 to 3.6 FTEs. That's for all programs. At a high point a couple years ago, OAR was at 5 FTEs when we got some extra money from the county for the reentry program, and also some money from the state DPCA to help with the reentry work. Let's see. Here's your local dollar share, which is really what you're probably most interested in. So overall, OAR is prepared for a 13% reduction. We've not made any over-target requests. I put together, because I think this might be something of interest, and I'm not going to dwell on it, because the one thing I always hate about PowerPoint is when you put it on a PowerPoint and then somebody reads it to you out loud. It's kind of like, well, what's the point of using the PowerPoint to begin with if I'm going to go through and read every line to you? But this will be something you can access in the future. It gives you an idea of OAR client service units. This first page is our direct services, the two of which I highlight a little bit later that save the county the most dollars up front are the bail loans and the assigned counsel intakes, which is a mandated service. These are also services that we provide, which are referrals to other agencies. We do DSS applications for inmates and former inmates of the Tompkins County Jail and their friends and family. We do a lot with housing applications, drug and alcohol referrals, and a bunch of other odds and ends. What's of some interest probably to you is the grand total of client service units. In 2009, it was 6,347. So far this year, we're at 4,619, and I've estimated, based on the reduced funding for OAR, that we'll be at 5,552 next year. So basically, here's my pitch, that our bail fund and the assigned counsel intake save taxpayer dollars. I think this is an interesting. The number here for county costs for corrections comes directly from the jail utilization annual report that the sheriff presented to public safety a couple months ago, I believe, now. What I did here was I took the total amount for corrections, which is your $3.5 million, divided by days, to come up with a per-day cost for what you're paying for your jail, divided that per-day cost by 90 inmates, which takes in the variances and is about where it's been running, about 88 to 90, which also has increased OAR's workload, because now that they're that many more people at the jail and not being boarded out, saving you money, but it's also meaning that we have that many more people to address their needs. And the average length of stay is 32 days, so each person we bail out saves about $3,470, or over that period of time, $215,140 was saved through the bail fund. The assigned counsel intake is a much looser number. The number that we did is firm. We did 251 assigned counsel intakes in 2009. How I got the county employee rate of pay was I took an account clerk and a case manager, put those together, plus your fringe, to come up with what the per hour cost is, which for a county employee to do the work we do would cost you modestly $32.62 an hour, given that OAR rate of pay is somewhat less. We qualify for food stamps, some of us, let's put it that way. At any rate, it comes out to $20.60, so that figuring 2 hours per intake, which is generous. Some go much more quickly, some take longer, but you're looking at a county savings of around $6,000 on that. I didn't cost out all the other applications that we do and all the other work we do that is obviously is still a much cheaper rate for not-profit workers than it is for a county employee. The per unit cost, all I did here was I took the number of service units in each year and divided the county expenditure by that to come up with a per unit cost. And you can see that we're staying pretty stable, and we look to go down in 2011 by a modest amount, about a dollar per a service unit. So really I think that as you look at, I really don't envy the legislature this budget year. I went back and tried to remember. There was a terrible budget year in 1991 as well that was, I think, almost as bad as this year, but I was at the other side of it, so it didn't seem so bad when I was cutting and not being cut. But it was a rough year in 91, and this year is very, very hard. I know that you're trying to balance all the human service needs in this community against some very, very real constraints. I will just say that I believe that money spent in OAR services, and we've tried to come up with numbers and data for you to a greater extent than OAR ever did before, does save you money in the long run. But to quantify that, we can argue constantly over, you know, dollars and cents. A measure of society is how well we take care of our most marginalized. And if I think OAR certainly represents and works with our most marginalized members of the society. So I urge you, even in this really, really hard time, to think about those who are under the most stress during this recession. So that's all I have.
Questions for Deb? Peter?
Debbie, what happens if none of this is restored?
If none of it's funded or none of it restored? Because
no.
I haven't asked for any restoration.
So
OTRs.
There are no OTRs.
There are no OTRs.
No.
So what will happen?
Well, if it is not funded,
yeah,
OAR will close. And you will find that those services will have to be picked up by someone else at probably a higher cost. And it will trickle through the system because the higher cost will be reflected in whatever agency or not-for-profit you decide to move those services to. They'll need more funding. If it goes to an agency, it'll be substantially more funding, a county agency, than it would another not-for-profit. I don't think that your results will be as good with the clients if it goes into certain agencies because of the trust and the relationship that's been established between clients and OAR over a 30-some-year period.
I guess what I was really asking was how will your service differ next year than this year?
Well, I've cut down the service units some to reflect the loss of one FTE. My staff, what little we are, we're working at full capacity right now. We will continue at that kind of level of capacity. I think that we'll prioritize in the sense that we always prioritize because we haven't had a lot of fat ever in this budget. It's been a pretty tight budget from the beginning. But the assigned counsel intakes, since it's an incredible constitutional right of people to, are entitled to assigned counsel if they qualify financially, and bails, the presumption of innocence until proven guilty, will be the two fundamental core services that will be maintained. Those are also the two core services that save the county the most money. Other things, we may, as a matter of fact, when we were down a little bit, we've been down even one more than that. We've been operating at 2.6. We reduced our drop-in center hours by a day. There are other ways around the edges we can reduce. The other cut we're making is we're not doing an audit next year. One of the things that's kind of struck me as really pretty absurd is that we've been doing an annual audit for years, for 30-some years, and it costs us $4,000. And if you're looking at a budget of this size to do an annual audit, we'll get, we just can't afford that kind of expense. So that's another place we've cut. We really can't cut. We don't have a lot of administration to cut or any HR people. I'm the HR person. We don't have, a lot of room for wiggle room, but our rent's very reasonable. We pay about $8 a square foot.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Dooley?
I remember in the past there was some concern over the availability of time you could have at the jail to work with or for inmates, and I wondered if everything is good now.
The relationship between OAR and the inmates changed about 12 years ago some. We used to have access, this is before my time working for OAR, but it's my understanding that OAR used to go into the cell blocks and be able to meet one-on-one with the clients. That hasn't been the case since I've been there. So I'm only talking about historically. What we do is we go to the jail 4 days a week, four mm-hmm. afternoons, and we meet with the inmates in the visiting room. So there's not much privacy or anything. So if we're filling out some kinds of papers, it's a little bit dicey, but we manage that pretty well. Given that there are always things at the jail, things will arise. There'll be an emergency or something else, so that we may be asked to leave the jail. But we do go up four afternoons a week.
So that's adequate access, given the staff you have.
Yeah, given the staff we have, it's a little hard now that there are that many more people up there to get everything done. But the other thing OAR has is a direct line from the jail to OAR. And so we do a lot of our work via phone about lining up who we have to meet with when we go up there. We'll do intakes over the phone. We can ask someone from one cell block to say, listen, can you have Junior, who's also in your cell block, give us a call, and we can do some work over the phone. So the direct line, between the direct line and the four afternoons and our capacity, we're pretty much tapped out.
Thanks.
Julie.
Anyone else?
Mike.
Debbie, the loss of the audit, audits protect your staff and your board to make sure there aren't mistakes being made. Will you be doing that every other year, or what will you do?
Definitely, and the other thing we're looking at is the cost. We're talking to our auditor now to see what kind of, I'm trying to remember, there's a financial term for it, but it's a review of the books. It's not a full-blown audit, but it's someone who will do a check and balance. Our treasurer is also very involved in the bookkeeping. I mean, she looks at all, and we have established since I got there a set of checks and balances that small agencies frequently don't have, but who opens the statements, who reconciles them, who does that kind of thing. But we will have, it will be every other year for sure, but I'm hoping to be able to afford a small kind of check-in where an auditor looks for the key kinds of fraud, points where fraud frequently exists.
Pleasant.
Debbie, the assigned counsel intakes that you do, is that something that's contracted with assigned counsel, or you all have just taken that?
No, we've just always done it. We have a close working relationship. We get the booking and release forms from the jail every mm-hmm. morning and look at who's been booked, intake forms, actually. And then what we do is we do the assigned counsel intakes. We fax them then to the assigned counsel office. So we've not been reimbursed by assigned counsel program for any of that work. That's something that the funding to OAR has helped pay for.
Thank you.
Any other questions by anyone?
Thank you.
Well, I guess that Mike? I have a question. If you didn't do that, how would it get done?
That's basically, I think what you'd have to do is the people who are currently in the assigned counsel program, which is very thinly staffed, I think it's not even two full-time plus a part-time mm-hmm. supervising attorney, would have to do the intakes, or you'd have to hire someone to do so.
Okay. Anything else?
May I ask just one follow-up?
Sure.
The state aid you got in 2008, was that the CPA money or something you talked about?
Yeah, that was the Department of Probation and Correctional Alternatives money that was really earmarked for DSS, for the substance
okay.
abuse counselor, and they weren't up and running. So we jumped in and grabbed it so that the county didn't lose it. So
gotcha.
One time.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next is the History Center.
County story.
Easier
things I thought.
Pardon a rookie mistake. I did not use the PowerPoint template that was sent my way. I'm Scott Callen. I'm the quite new director of the History Center in Tompkins County, and wanted to briefly use my time today to first introduce myself and secondly to give you an overview of the History Center and where we are going forward. In 2008, our agreement with the county, resolution number 142, set us on a five-year course of county occupancy support. This is probably a familiar number to you. So we're in the midst of that. I don't think we have any. I believe we're part of this year's budget. To give you an idea of what that county support means to our annual budget, it's about 28% of our annual operating budget. And this goes directly toward our occupancy costs. Other ways that we fill out that budget, a good third of it comes from our annual campaign, grants, earned income, special events, and the like. But you see 28% there. Okay. Just a quick overview of who we are. Our annual budget is about $343,000 this year. I am the one full-time employee, and I have a staff of seven part-timers. We do operate a 2,500 square foot facility with archives, research library space, and exhibit space. Our most recent exhibit was on the rural photographer of the early 20th century, Vern Morton. We do educational programs like the Student Historians Program, events like the Reiner Festival. We operate the 8 Square Schoolhouse and participate in the Kids Discover the Trail program. And in a given year for us, we are now serving about 8,000 people. Our mission, I won't read it, pretty standard fare for a history museum. We care for artifacts. We reach out to the community. We operate programs making history relevant to the present, and we provide a neutral environment for public discussion about history and historical perspective. Our audience is diverse. We do a current series on recent immigration to Tompkins County, for example. We serve all ages, from lifelong learners down to the youngest. We serve the entire county. We are close partners with the county historians and the municipal historian. And we serve Tompkins County as a whole. We preserve the artifacts of the past. And we are a vital part, I would say, of the cultural landscape of the community. Our number served, we admittedly took a dip there from 2005 to 2006. We have bounced back, and we're growing. We project 2010 to be our best year yet, and I don't expect 2011 to be any less so. And going forward, what you can expect from us, we're doing more and better exhibits. We will be involved with teacher professional development, more of our living history program at the 8 Square Schoolhouse in Dryden, continued events like the Reiner Festival. We're always looking for more collaborations with our sister organizations in town, be they the Discovery Trail organizations or others. And the big thing for us, balancing our budget and growing slowly and moderately as we can, but with a balanced budget. So I'll leave it at that and open to any questions.
Sir. Frank.
Okay. Scott, first, congratulations on being named to the Civil War Commission.
Thank you. I understand we're partners.
Yes, we are.
Look forward to it.
And Mike is co-chair. Okay. The one other reminder is the History Center, if I'm not mistaken, unless something has changed, is the official repository.
Yes, sir.
For the county documents and whatnot. Can you say what percent of your budget you do from fundraising?
Which percent of our budget we allocate to fundraising? Is that your question?
Or how much of it you actually, because I know there's an effort made to raise X number of dollars.
Sure.
And what percentage you?
So about 30% of our operating budget comes from our annual campaign, which is essentially our annual fund. I would say, though I don't have the exact figure on hand, we spend probably about 10 to 12% of our budget on fundraising itself, which would put us about average for an organization of our size.
We've been trying to get the New York State Archives to do something through the history piece to help support you. I know you're relatively new as a director there, yes, but that may be something that you may want to talk to Jeannie about pursuing.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks. So, that was a statement in the guise of a question. Yes. I'm doing what Peter does. Thanks.
Continue.
Right? That's a question, right?
Agreed.
Jim has to call.
Go ahead.
Okay.
And then Mike.
Yeah, I know. I want to go a similar direction to where Frank was going, but with more of a question to it. So
I would take that over.
Is there no?
Let me help you,
Carol. Is there no requirement on the part of New York State that communities maintain archives to their to the kind of legacy that the History Center maintains?
To my knowledge, the requirement stipulates that each community has a county historian. I don't know if there's a requirement for facilities to be made for the care of artifacts. I can find out.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know. And what percentage of communities around the state maintain them, and what's happened to those who have tossed out, have decided we just can't do this anymore and have tossed out those documents or let them decompose?
Sure.
Can I do a follow-up to her?
There is actually, Mike's turn.
Oh. Excuse me. Scott, on your funding, you show 12% is coming from other municipalities. Which municipalities contribute?
12% of our funding comes from, other government support. That would be primarily through NISCA, New York State Council of the Arts.
New York State.
Some funding through New York Council of the Humanities. And I think that essentially covers
it. But you're not getting money from the city of Ithaca, for example?
No, sir.
Or the town of Ithaca or something. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Frank.
Just a follow-up on Carol's question. I believe there is a requirement from the state that you do maintain certain records. I'm not sure it's every single thing, but having been on the Archives Commission for a number of years, I'll bet you $100 that...
You are required to keep records.
Yeah.
But the distinction of records to artifacts, anything the county purchases ultimately could be an asset which we have a fiduciary duty, stewardship duty to maintain. But a long time ago, there might have been different people might have donated photographs and things like that. We don't have a big operation going on of taking pictures or things like that today. So a lot of the, as I understand it, a lot of is artifacts like that.
The three-dimensional objects, yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. Preservation of county legislators who have become artifacts. Is that right, Dave?
I won't touch that.
Oh, please.
Anyone else?
If I may, I would just encourage everybody to please drop by the History Center. You do support it. We're quite proud of where we're going. We keep a rotating schedule of exhibits open and programs well worth your time, so please do drop by. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a short time out. And I had called the county historian. The county historian is Carol Kamen. And her budget is on page 45 of the first 300. And it's 7,000.
7,000 total, 2,000 local.
Yeah, local.
The balance covered by room tax money.
Room tax money. So, if you have a question for her, I'll answer it.